Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 26th of February, 2021.
The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited and will be read and presented by Vara and Tom Williams.
Hello. Hello. The first main headline story this week is Relief at Roadmap to Freedom. And it's quite a long one. Prime Minister Boris Johnson this week unveiled his plan to exit lockdown, which could see Winchester and the rest of the country return to close to normal life by June. Business leaders and civic chiefs in the district were largely reassured by Mr. Johnson's roadmap, which will be split into four separate steps, starting with pupils returning to school on March the 8th. On March the 29th, larger groups of up to six people or two households could be allowed to gather in parks and gardens. Restrictions are expected to be lifted for shops, hairdressers, libraries, outdoor attractions and outdoor hospitality venues such as beer gardens on April the 12th. Owner and landlord of the Wanston Arms, Matthew Todd, said, "For me, being a wet-only pub and there being no rules attached to eating food, is a huge relief so people can come and socialise in a group of six or as a family, sit outside and enjoy a nice social drink. I am hugely relieved for my customers because that is what they have missed. It might sound small, but it is part of what a wet pub is." Matthew said that the pub would be opening on April the 12th and to have a firm date to look forward to, he added, "It feels real, feels a relief, and the sacrifices that we have all had to put up with were needed to get us to this point." Selina Jogaloo, owner of PW Beauty in Alsford, said, "PW Beauty are delighted that we have been given a provisional reopening date of the 12th of April and that the PM has acknowledged the beauty industry specifically. Requests to be added to our priority booking list have been flooding in and we're ready for a strong relaunch in the spring. We're hoping to recruit more therapists and expand our salons as we put this past year behind us." On May the 17th, two households or groups of up to six people may be allowed to mix indoors, and crowds of up to 10,000 in the largest venues will be allowed at performances and sporting events. The date has been welcomed by Play to the Crowd, which runs the Theatre Royal, after it faced closure last year. Chief Executive Derek Newland said, "We are pleased to see the government's roadmap out of the latest lockdown and relieved to have been provided with a no earlier than date. This will allow us to plan to a time frame rather than just holding a finger in the wind. Whilst this is good news, there are caveats at each stage of this roadmap, and we are mindful that audiences may be less keen to return by the timescales laid out. There's a lot to digest, so we will take our time to discuss the best way for us to move forward." Mr. Johnson unveiled that from June the 21st, all remaining restrictions on social contact could be lifted, with larger events given the go-ahead, and nightclubs could finally reopen. But Winchester's MP Steve Brine questioned Mr. Johnson on his decision to delay the opening of hospitality venues and outdoor sports. Speaking in the House of Commons, Mr. Brine said, "I want to welcome and to raise a hallelujah along with parents and children for the good sense of schools returning for all pupils on the 8th of March. It's the right thing to do on so many levels. May I ask the Prime Minister, however, what evidence has driven his decision that outdoor sport, not in-school outdoor sport, but wider outdoor sport, for those same children cannot go ahead for another month? Furthermore, Can he say why, after all the good work that they did last year to create COVID-secure environments, restaurants and cafes face another 3 months before they can open in any meaningful way? What is the evidence that he has seen that has convinced him to make that decision today? Following the PM's announcement, Winchester City Council leader Lucille Thompson said, "For now, England is still in a national lockdown. So, as we progress through the steps and the rounds of tests that will herald each progression to the next phase towards a more liberated daily life, we will need to keep up our efforts. In the meantime, at the City Council, we will continue to do everything we can to support our district during this time, maintaining both our day-to-day services and our COVID-19 support. And to all the public servants, thank you for all that you are doing to help keep our district running. To our residents and businesses, thank you for your continued patience."
And the second headline reads, "Alliance formed to fight new towns." Winchester Countryside campaigners have formed a new alliance to fight plans for local new towns. Three Winchester campaign groups have united to oppose building new towns as a way of delivering housing targets. The Countryside Charity, CPRE Hampshire, Save South Winchester Campaign Group, SSWCG, and the Diva Society are urging Winchester City Council to reject building new towns in their new local plan. The City Council published Your Place, Your Plan, Strategic Issues and Priorities Consultation, the first opportunity for Winchester residents to have their say on the new local plan, the blueprint for development until 2038. New towns are one of the four housing options proposed. For 30 years, campaigners have fought against Mitchell Dever New Town and now Royal Down, a proposal for farmland between Oliver's Battery and Hursley. A protest petition had attracted more than 4,000 names. SSWCG chairman Chris Beddoes said, "We all understand that Winchester District will need to build new homes in the next 15 to 20 years, but we believe that there is a better and more environmentally friendly option than large-scale development or new towns filling the green space between settlements. We hope that Winchester District residents will agree and make their views known in the consultation." Diva Society Chairman Tessa Robertson added, "All three groups agree that building new towns on green fields is the worst of all four options proposed in the paper. New towns should have no place in Winchester's thinking." Ms. Robertson told the Chronicle, "There is a feeling that Winchester has taken enough development and it will be better if it goes somewhere else. We can't feel complacent about Mitchell Dever. This is the first time the three groups have got together." A virtual demonstration has been organised by SSWCG for this Sunday, February the 28th at noon. To book a place to hear more, go to sswdemo.eventbrite.com. The three groups believe that brownfield, already used or built on land, should always be for development before greenfield sites. Members of the three campaign groups summarise some of the many reasons why new towns are not a good idea for Winchester or for the environment and the climate, including 1. Greenfield sites build at low housing densities and are a wasteful use of land. 2. New towns need new roads, schools, healthcare, electricity, water, sewage and other carbon-heavy services. Building these has a major adverse implications for the environment and for the Council's Carbon Neutrality Action Plan. 3. New towns encourage car use and their layouts often work against walking and cycling. Even those near public transport invariably end up as car-dependent developments. 4. New towns promise but rarely deliver significant numbers of homes that are genuinely affordable to local people. The groups are working on their responses to the consultation and will share their thinking by the end of March, in good time for the deadline of April the 12th.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Excuse me. Gilliam, Anne Colette Gilliam, in Marfield Care Home, Alton, aged 89. Halliwell, Monica Halliwell, at home. Hardiman, Jill Margaret Hardiman, at Old Alsford Cottage, aged 84. Hennessy, Olive Rose Hennessy, at home, aged 96. Leslie, Kenneth Moulton Leslie, in Winchester, aged 96. Lewis, Roger Lewis, at home, aged 81. McLean Smith, Edith Henry McLaren Smith, at RHCH, aged 85. Moon, Frank Henry Moon. Pleming, Dr. Robert William Pleming, at home in Alsford, aged 69. Stratton, Jean Mary Stratton, aged 94. And Young, Harold Young.
Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Philip Crinks, priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish at St. Cross, and is headed The Wilderness. I wonder if you've ever been in the wilderness. Have you been in a desert? Have you been on the high Alps, in a rainforest? Or in this country, have you spent time in the Scottish Highlands or the Peak District? Or have you walked far enough into the South Downs to feel the wilderness there? A physical wilderness is a double-edged place, a place of danger and isolation, a place of freedom of excitement, but it's always a place of testing and challenge. Jesus begins his ministry in the wilderness. He leaves his early home in Nazareth and travels to the vast scrubland of the Jordan Valley. That is where John the Baptist was living and baptizing people who came to make a new start in life. That place can still be visited today. On the west bank side, its name is Kazir el-Yahud. On the east bank side, it is in Jordan. It is known by its Arabic name, Al-Maqdas. It's a place of intensity, geographically, politically, and spiritually. The river, an international border, finds its path through land which is almost a desert. As Jesus emerged from the water, the Holy Spirit descended on him like a dove, and then immediately drove him away from the river into that dry wilderness. Within a mile, the hot sun would have dried the waters from his body, and soon the testing began. But Jesus was ready. He was prepared. We could look at the current lockdown as a wilderness time. 51 days so far. It has challenged and tested each of us in different ways. The scriptures said that Jesus' tests came from Satan himself. Similarly, later Christians who made their homes in the desert spoke of the demon-like trials to be endured in its silence and solitude. What demons do we face in our lockdown wilderness? One is depression, feeling down and miserable. I've known weeks like that. The way to wrestle with this is not, I think, oh, I mustn't feel this way. Rather, it's to have compassion on yourself. This is what is happening now. I'm doing the best I can. For the rest, I will trust in God. A second demon is frustration, feeling cross and crotchety with everyone around us. Our family, the postman, the delivery driver. Again, let's have compassion on ourselves and on others. God knows there are reasons to feel angry and frustrated. But by God's grace, we can put a little gap between our feelings and our words. In that gap, his grace can work to turn that sharp or hasty word into something better. And when we get it wrong, which we will because we are human, Well, that's where the waters of the baptism come in, into which Jesus led us. Like a mighty flood, they can wash all our shortcomings away. We can know that refreshment, every time we name what's gone wrong and turn back to God to put our conscience right. When Jesus comes back from his wilderness, he begins his proclamation to us and to all people. The time is fulfilled. The kingdom of God is near. Turn again and believe in the good news. And that was from the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Moving on to letters to the editor. The first letter is from Professor Nigel Wood, and it's entitled Hyde Street. Sir, I am puzzled as to what Steve Harborne, Bill Hodie and their co-petitioners actually want in the battle to reopen Closed Road Chronicle, February the 18th. Do they really wish to see the hundreds of people who live and work in Hyde Street return to the bad old days before the street's closure, with its dangerous traffic, associated noise and heavy pollution? The city end of Hyde Street, where most congestion occurred, has many retirement flats as well as social housing. Those living here are not vociferous campaigners, but they and all other Hyde Street residents stand to have their everyday lives diminished by a return to the old system. The measures introduced by the County Council seem both imaginative and progressive. They were devised in the cause of social distancing in response to COVID, but they have also served to raise the much larger issues of traffic pollution and the need for safer cycling and walking routes within the city. Making Hyde Street access only has shown what can be done to address these issues and provides a good model for future planners. It is also difficult to see who would benefit from a return to the old system. Traffic would still increase steadily, as it has done for years, and residents of Hyde Street, Worthy Lane, North Walls and City Road would all suffer accordingly. A more radical approach is needed. If this discourages traffic into the city to some extent, then this would be a positive result. I respect our two county councillors, Martin Todd and Dominic Hiscock, for sticking to their principles in supporting these measures and for guiding them through to the next stage of consultation. There are two sides to this debate, and it does seem that some rebalancing of the discussion is overdue, particularly as the reopen campaign is now threatening legal action. And that's from Professor Nigel Wood, Hyde Street, Winchester.
Julian Chisholm of Arthur Road takes a different view of this matter, and his letter is headed Green Fascism. Sir, as a resident of Hyde who is affected by the summary closure of Hyde Street last spring, I am in absolute agreement with the remarks of Bill Hode and Steve Harborne, which were reported on the front page of last week's edition. The traffic arrangements put in place last spring were opportunistic, done without consultation, and authoritarian green fascism, excused by the pandemic and obfuscation. It is not surprising that an attempt is now being made to legitimise the closing of Hyde Street through consultation about traffic arrangements which extend beyond those put in place last spring. The behaviour and response of Liberal councillors, who often sit on the City Council and the County Council, show that they see the traffic measure as pushing forward their green agenda. In fact, they have destroyed it. Most of us, including myself, see the importance of improving environmental performance, especially with regard to climate change. But the way forward is not to antagonise the public by damaging and ill-thought-out schemes. That is from Julian Chisholm, Arthur Road, Hyde.
Well, now we move over to Debenhams. This comes from Rachel Parker. As we all know, Debenhams are closing their stores. I would like to think the plans for the premises in Winchester High Street would be to bring Winchester back to life again and help small businesses recover from the current situation, as well as improving on affordability for local businesses going into the future of our lovely city. My own thoughts were market traders floor. A floor with a mixture of small local businesses and stalls or pods, and an open-plan canteen with several local takeaway food counters or stalls. Possibly... I'm so sorry. Possibly allow space for WI, crafts, scouts and other community groups to sell and make funds to keep these groups viable. We should be encouraging community spirit now of all times. If the high street were freed up, this would make the area less congested during the majority of the year. The high street could be used for a very short period whilst the Christmas markets runs, which would have more spacing to cope with the crowds than the current location. Keeping the ice rink and seasonal mobile food vans in its present location, allowing the masses more room, providing a more pleasant walk around the city, and should COVID become a normal way of life, the spacing will reduce the risk of virus transmission. And that comes from Rachel Parker, Lower Road, South Wanston.
Kate Craig simply has ideas for Debenhams and writes, "Sir, my wish is for the refurbishment of Debenhams Winchester store, with the first floor for small units around the room selling cooked meals using Hampshire produce, with tables and chairs in the centre area, and with other areas selling fresh Hampshire produce, plants and herbs, small units of crafts, possibly with craft demonstrations in the high season. The basement on the left side of the room selling antiques, and to the right of the room selling unwanted children's toys, etc., to be run by volunteers on behalf of Hampshire NHS COVID-19 and cancer departments, if they agree. The upper floors could be made into luxury apartments, thinking of Hampshire mature people who want to buy in the town centre with affordable housing placed out of town on good bus routes and schools." That's from Kate Craig of Stony Lane Week.
Well, now we move over to the M3. This is from Veronica Bliss and is headed Smart M3. The more I read about the forthcoming smart motorway on the M3 between junctions 9 and 12, the more concerned I become. I live in Compton and regularly see bad accidents when the cars travelling at speed downhill have to brake suddenly as slower traffic crawls up the steeper sections. The section between these junctions is particularly hilly. As anyone knows, as soon as an accident happens on this busy section, the M3 quickly comes to a halt and all the local roads snarl up for miles. We know that the signs on the smart motorway take some time to operate, by which time it would be impossible for emergency vehicles to get through without an emergency lane. Surely this just does not make sense. Why do we as locals not get more say in the matter? A better junction at Winnell is surely the most important matter to solve at present. Accidents there cause blockages for miles, often necessitating a deviation as far as Basingstoke if you are heading north up the A34. And that was from Veronica Bliss, Cleesway, Compton.
Judith Martin writes, Civic Foresight. Sir, back in the 1970s and 80s, before my time in Winchester, the newly formed council, after reorganisation in 1974, had a chief planner called Jack Thompson, who had come from Hampshire County Council. I don't know the full story, but one of his acts, following the abandonment of schemes for inner ring roads, etc., was to buy a lot of historically important property for the city's portfolio. Some of this has since been sold, encouraged by a combination of cuts and government policy to disinvest. But because of him, Winchester still has significant buildings like Chesil Rectory, Godbegot House, and the Barnes store in Abbots Barton and more. This comes to mind now as Winchester City Council announces plans to spend £10 million on land for council housing, while planning to sell the Bar End Depot for about the same amount. Wouldn't it be quicker and cheaper to build on the depot site? There could even be something like a community development trust or scope for self-build, rent rates to rise for council tenants, Chronicle, February the 18th. There's Upper Brook Street car park sold to a developer for a new surgery based on a plan conceived years before this pandemic and before the high street started to empty out, partly because of the government-imposed rise in business rates. Now the biggest single site on the high street is about to fall vacant. I'd like to think Jack Thompson would have bought the Debenham site, which incidentally belongs to Surrey County Council, in another round of government policy, this time to diversify investments. Other people have suggested housing there. The value of the view of the cathedral from the penthouse flat would surely cross-subsidise the rest. But it could also provide a wellness centre, including a new surgery, on the principles put forward by the Social Market Foundation last month. The council's own vision consultation last year concluded that there was a need for culture change at all levels. There's plenty of good practice and research on the Good Society available, if only members and officers were open to it. And that is from Judith Martin of Romsey Road.
We have V1 memories here from Barry Ansell. I read the item in the Chronicle by Barry Sherlock about the plane crash at Fisher's Pond with great interest, especially the item regarding the V1s, as I shall never forget when I was living, aged 5, with my mother in our bungalow at 2 Weavils Road, Fair Oak, during World War II. On that night, the air raid warning had sounded and we went to the shelter in our garden. Sometime later, we heard a V1 approaching, and when the noise was right overhead, the engine suddenly cut out. There was a huge whoosh of air, followed by a deafening explosion, which demolished the house on the eastern corner of Weavils Road and Fair Oak Road, and also the bungalow adjacent to it on Fair Oak Road. When we emerged from our shelter, we found the roof of our bungalow missing and the inside wrecked, but fortunately there was no fire. The bungalow on Fair Oak Road had received an almost direct hit, with the occupants inside using an indoor shelter. One person unfortunately died, but the others survived. As far as I know, they were the only casualties. The other V1 fortunately landed harmlessly in Stoke Park Woods. At that time, my father was serving with the RAF in Italy and returned home in 1945. Hoping you may find this of interest, Barry Ansell, Church Lane, Colden Common.
And M.K. Waldron has other memories, but his memories are memories of coal. Sir, my brother and I were coal merchants in and around Winchester, and therefore know the early boys, Ron and John, Chronicle, February the 4th, 11th and 18th. They told me the history for their firm, which I'm sure your correspondent, Mr. Robert Early, would not object to me sharing. The founder of the business, I think, Alfred Herbert Early, was a tailor. His eyesight was deteriorating. In an attempt to remedy this, he walked to Southampton to consult an eye specialist, a Mr. Zorab. Despite this, his size became such that he could no longer work as a tailor. He bought a railway truck of coal, which he delivered, presumably 2 sacks, 200 weight at a time, with a pair of sack trucks pushed by hand. In time, he bought a horse and cart. At some time, disaster struck. The horse and cart ran away down Wharf Hill. The horse was injured and had to be put down. Some of his customers clubbed together and bought him another horse, thus enabling him to continue trading. The business started in 1886 and finished in 1985. Ron and John then wished to retire. They asked if I would be interested in taking on their customers, but the retail on solid fuels sales was declining rapidly, and a couple of years later I ceased trading as well. That was M.K. Waldron, late partner in M&N Waldron, Coal Merchants, Main Road, Hursley.
This letter comes from Councillor Rob Humby, Hampshire County Council, and it's headed, "Don't Blame Us." I was pleased to read your report highlighting Winchester City Council's new initiative to encourage more people to report fly tipping in the Chronicle on February the 18th. However, I was concerned to read your assumptions on the reasons for fly tipping and feel it is important residents are equipped with the facts. I am very clear that there is no excuse for fly tipping, and there is no evidence to support a connection with any operational changes at our extensive network of HWRCs. Fly tipping is predominantly an organised crime on a national scale, with profits made by criminal gangs well publicised in the national media. Our partnership work to tackle fly tipping with district councils, the police, landowners, the CLA and the NFU is working well and we are seeing results. But it will take all of us to help. I would urge all Hampshire residents to be vigilant, report what they see and know their legal duty when it comes to employing anyone to take their waste for them. In Hampshire, we have made it as easy as possible for people to dispose of waste responsibly, legally and conveniently. The majority of household waste, including all the waste in the picture accompanying your article, can be taken for free by householders to any one of the sites in our large network. The booking system, introduced to keep staff and customers safe during the pandemic, is operating well, with capacity at the Winchester HWRC indicating that all those who want one are able to find a booking slot. And that's from Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment at Hampshire County Council.
Still on the subject of waste, Angela Saunders writes about brown waste bins. Sir, further to my letter of February the 18th, eagle-eyed readers will have spotted the error. The annual charge for those brown waste bins is not £700. The true figure is £59, as opposed to £0. My sentiments remain the same, though. Why are we now paying for this previously free service, with absolutely no consultation or prior warnings, as far as I'm aware? I'm still awaiting delivery of mine, and my full green bag remains unemptied outside my house. And that's from Angela Saunders, Main Road, Otterbourne.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is headed, "Time to think about rebuilding everything." There's obviously a sense of relief at the Prime Minister's announcement on Monday about the timetable for the easing of lockdown. Non-essential shops will be able to reopen, potentially from April the 12th. Or will they? Many things are still up in the air, not least for the hospitality sector. And although the mental toll, if Boris Johnson's schedule does not come to pass, does not bear thinking about. Yet it seems people are more resilient than maybe we could have expected. The nation has gone through a lot over the last 12 months, and they know that the numbers can still go up, even with the brilliant work of the NHS and its partners, such as local authorities and charities, in organising the vaccination programme. But really, the hard work of rebuilding starts now. It will be like rebuilding a city after a war in which bombs had fallen. No bombs fell this time, but the economic damage and the psychological toll will be as great. What is going for us is that there is a high degree of pent-up demand and many people's savings sitting untouched to be used in making up this a summer to remember.
And first person this week comes from Joanna Lewis and is headed, "The Power of Birds." It comes as no surprise to us now that one of the most famous pop songs celebrating human happiness starts with "Birds fly in the sky, you know how I feel." For let's face it, a lot of us have fallen a bit in love with our feathered earth companions over the last year. For me, it began post-virus and recovering in deep isolation. Was it their freedom to fly away? A glint of a coloured feather in the sun? Or their comical attempts to keep control over their fledglings? It was all a welcome distraction and a way of reappreciating everyday life. "Do you need me to get you anything?" friends would ask. "A bag of mealworms and a suet bar." They probably thought I had some very odd side effects. My most vivid first post-lockdown memory was driving to Alsford when a red kite swooped down and flew over the road. It was a sign nature was thriving because human activity had been curtailed. A year since our lives changed, many of us are loving the first February signs of the dawn chorus, desperate for evidence that the cycle of life, well, is still a cycle, that this harsh, unpredictable winter has not added to nature's survival woes. For the new tribe of insomniacs, it's sounds of the forest, lapping waves, or rain that dominate our playlists. But it's birds that for many have become their new hobby. A quarter of my Ocado delivery is now made up of bird food. I am completely au fait with fat balls, Nigra seed, and the blue tit special mix. If I'm not out distributing breakfast, their shop floor steward, a cheeky juvenile robin, is at the kitchen window. It's even emboldened me to ask that big relationship question. "Darling, would you mind if I wore bird binoculars when we go walking?" I'm not brave enough to follow through yet, despite getting the green light. Wearing tweed, a few extra pounds, and having layered my side bits with a kitchen scissors, I'm worried I'm less Kate Humble and more Bill Oddy. I'm also learning fascinating stuff about birds. 2 years ago, I took out a subscription to the RSPB, as there was a very good-looking man on a stand outside the co-op offering incentives. But my newsletter used to go unread. Now the arrival of Wingbeat is a real highlight. I've learned they are, in effect, miniature living dinosaurs. Tiny descendants of Jurassic beasts are strutting and skirmishing in front of our very eyes, dear reader. We can see in them, too, the very story of human evolution. Early humans were inspired to make sounds by bird communication, which led to human song, music, and speech. They enabled us to become human. Birds have always been there for us, come to think of it. My great-aunt used to go to the cinema with a parrot and a bag of satsumas. Christmas Eve starts in our family with a light buffet and bird bingo. Comedy for my generation was a man straddling a fluffy bird. Bernie Clifton rode an orange ostrich and we were in stitches. Probably very wrong. But wouldn't it be great that instead of the Sussex's sofa whinging with opera, they faced Roy Hudd and Emu? Certainly, I love this new fashion for bird wallpaper. People want to be closer to nature, to be reassured it's still thriving. But that's far from reality. When I did the RSPB Garden Bird Survey recently, I recorded just 5 species. Then we heard the tragic news. Woodpecker Drive is to lose another 4 gardens to a housing development that will shoehorn in nearly 30. That species and its habitat will be gone forever. In parts of Africa, there's a saying, when a bird comes close, it's bringing you a message. We need to listen and to keep tweeting our disgust at this cheapening of life.
Belgarum's alternative look at this at the news this week has one item headed Clocking On to Work. Teenager Lewis Walduck has plenty of time on his hands, literally. The 17-year-old, whose first words as a baby were tick-tock, has just started a rare horological apprenticeship with the clock workshop in Kingsworthy. "I love my job and so grateful for it," said Lewis, one of whose distant ancestors was Oliver Cromwell. "It's a dream come true. Clocks and watches and how they work have fascinated me for as long as I can remember." Clocking on, pardon me, clocking on for his apprenticeship means a 70-mile drive every day from his home in Bicester, Oxfordshire, and caused a desperate race to pass his driving test before Christmas to avoid a potential 4-hour train journey to work. "Fortunately, I passed first time," said Lewis, whose love of timepieces began when his great-grandfather gave him his pocket watch. Then his great-grandmother presented him with a clock that had once belonged to her grandparents. "It's not the most valuable I have in monetary terms," he said, "but for sentimental reasons it means the most to me. I've been hooked on watches and clocks ever since. They are so beautiful, and I am fascinated by their intricate workings." While still at primary school, Lewis was taking watches apart and mending them for relatives and friends. By the age of 13, he was buying and selling them at Buckinghamshire Antique Fair he ran with his dad. Now he has a collection of more than 50 antique clocks and watches, some dating back to the 18th century, and one that used to belong to the fabulously wealthy Rothschild family. His grandmother, Julie Bradford, said, "We're so proud of Lewis. He's been fascinated by clocks ever since he was a baby. In fact, his first words were tick-tock when I took him outside as a toddler. And we always had to stop outside any shop selling clocks or watches so that he could stare into the window." The clock workshop, established in 1966, had its headquarters in Parchment Street, Winchester, for many years, before joining forces with Simon Allen of Abbotsbury, Dorset, and later moving to Kingsworthy. On his first day at work, Lewis found himself taking apart and refurbishing an antique £5,000 clock that plays the Whittington Chimes, named after Dick Whittington, the former London mayor, every hour. Now, £5,000 might sound quite a lot, but Lewis's ambition is one day to own a clock made by the celebrated 17th century horologist Joseph Knibb of Oxford, and they can cost up to £300,000. And with this article, there's a photograph of Lewis surrounded by clocks and holding what looks like a rare antique clock that I wouldn't be able to describe at all.
On to lighting up time. Lighting up time ends on Friday, the 26th of February, today at 6:56 a.m. and begins at 5:41 p.m. On Wednesday, the 3rd of March, it ends at 6:45 a.m. and begins at 5:50 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to your memory stick.
Now we continue with items of general news, beginning with our selection of what we call snippets from the sticks, short pieces of news from the parishes surrounding Winchester. And the first items concern Coldon Common and Twyford. The draft revised Coldon Common village statement is set to be approved for public consultation. And Councillor Jackie Porter will be holding a Winchester Council decision day on March the 1st. In the nearby village of Twyford, villagers have drawn up a plan that they hope will shape the future of their locality. Twyford Neighbourhood Plan has been published for comment by South Downs National Park. This is the submission version of the plan. Twyford Parish Council very much hope it is the final version, that it has taken them and their dedicated volunteer team almost 6 years to get to this point. All the time working through the labyrinthine neighbourhood planning procedures. The plan has taken its direction from the earliest consultation with the parishioners, who identified three priorities: environment, community, affordable housing for local people. The organisers of planting saplings in Churchfield's Meadows, Twyford, has been met with dozens of sponsors. Andy Coates said, "We've had such an amazing response to my request for sponsors to saplings that we must close the list. I thank all of the sponsors very much indeed, and I hope that you and the whole of Twyford will enjoy the results of the planting for many decades. My plan at the moment is for every sponsor to have at least one sapling dedicated to them or their family and labelled as such. I will endeavour to do a map to send out by email to show where your sapling is placed."
And now we have news from Littleton. The entrance to the car park for Littleton Recreation Ground was closed on Tuesday for the installation of two telescopic security bollards. The Parish Council has said that these will not be in place on a regular basis, but will allow the authority to close the recreation ground to cars on very limited occasions, such as to counter the antisocial behaviour that took place last summer. Although the car park will be closed to cars, pedestrians should be able to walk past the groundwork activity, although there could be times during the day when this may not be possible. The Parish Council has thanked residents for their patience and understanding after areas of the recreation ground were closed at the end of December due to slip hazards from excess mud. The problem was caused by a combination of factors, including heavy rainfall and grass deterioration as a result of the higher-than-normal footfall in recent months. The damaged areas are now said to be beginning to recover, and it is hoped that the conservation field will be open in the next few weeks, but other areas will remain cordoned off.
Comic gathering in lockdown gloom. This is the first item from going back to the main items of news. Comic gathering in lockdown gloom. Startled motorists and assumed residents welcomed the cheerful sight of a gathering of scarecrows in Bramdean and Impton Appner at the end of the half-term break. They came in a variety of shapes and sizes, and there was even a chicken in a basket hiding under a hedge. Adults and children joined in the fun to make a scarecrow to bring some humour into people's daily walks and to the village WhatsApp group. The idea came from the pop-up cafe team, who usually host a monthly coffee get-together in the village hall. There will be prizes for the most amusing scarecrow and all the children's entries at the first reopening of this popular event, and everyone attending will be asked to choose their favourite from a photo montage for the People's Choice Prize. This is accompanied by several photographs of scarecrows in their locations, including a very amusing one, which is the bottom half from the waist down of a scarecrow whose top half must be inside the wheelie bin.
Number of empty shops in city centre. It was once a bustling place for shopping, eating, drinking and learning about history. But these days, Winchester city centre can sometimes appear to be a ghost town. Will it ever be the same again after the pandemic? There are currently 18 empty shop units, with businesses forced to close or move out in these challenging times. These used to be occupied by the following: Laura Ashley, Starbucks, Whittard's, Bellis, West Cornwall Food Company, Edinburgh Woolen Mill, Blue Bamboo, Huster Shop, City Cobbler, Debenhams, Hotter, Jigsaw, The Whole Hog, Royal Bank of Scotland, Bakehouse and Parklife Kids. As reported last week, Winchester's shop vacancy rate is relatively low when compared to the big picture and much lower than in the deep recession at the start of the 1990s. It is below the national average at 11.2%, up from 8.2% in 6 months. 2% below the national average, according to Winchester Business Improvement District. Despite the closures, Winchester has been named as one of Britain's leading shopping locations in new research. The city ranked as the UK's 34th best performing in a list of 1,000 retail centres, compiled by strategic retail property consultancy Harper Dennis Hobbs. It climbed 27 places compared to last year's rankings. Andy Metherill, head of retail consultancy, said, "The most vital retail centres currently provide services that are essential to people's lives, such as grocers and pharmacies. These essential retailers have been able to trade throughout the strictest lockdowns, and consumers have not been willing or able to travel far to visit these stores. Shopping patterns have therefore changed significantly since the start of the pandemic, and consumers' local high streets are benefiting at the expense of major destinations."
Last-minute objections to propose new park and ride. Winchester City Council has defended its plans for huge new park and ride car park. The authority was faced with backlash after submitting an application for a 15-metre multi-storey with three levels. There's been a last-minute stream of objections, with 38 registered with the Council Planning Department by Monday, and only one expression of support. The closing date for responses was February the 24th. If approved, the car park will carry 287 cars at the former Voltex site in Bar End, but residents are urging officers to change their mind. They say it's too tall, unnecessary, and will block natural light. A spokesperson for the City Council said the planning application was submitted in January for a new two-floor decked car park on the former Voltex site to provide additional park and ride facilities funded by the EM3 Local Enterprise Partnership. The previously agreed scheme was for a surface park car park with fewer spaces. The Winchester Movement strategy identified the need for additional park and ride spaces at Bar End, and the plans for the deck car park have been considered and adapted to reflect feedback from local residents following the virtual engagement meetings for nearby communities. The planning application process typically takes about 13 weeks, and all concerned will be carefully considered as part of that process. Objections from members of the public are racking up.
Areas free of new COVID cases. Seven areas of the Winchester district are now almost COVID-free. Numbers of new cases have been generally declining, except the second outbreak of the prison in Winchester West and slight increases in a couple of areas. The seven areas now marked white on the government map because they've had fewer than three cases in the 7 days to February the 18th are Alsford, Springvale and Itchen Abbas, South Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Micheldever, Winchester North, Oliver's Battery and Hursley, Stanmore and Winchester East. Over the last 6 days, the number of reported new cases have been 7 today and 4, 6, 6, 4 and 6. These are lowest run of numbers since September to October. But in the Winchester West area, which includes the prison, in the 7 days to February the 18th, there were 40 new cases, an increase of 22. That is among the highest in the country. Other areas seeing an increase are Denmead and Southwark with 10 new cases, up one, and also above, and Whiteley, Knowle and Wickham with 15 cases, up six. In the last 7 days to Tuesday, there have been 51 cases in the Winchester district, down from the previous week's 114. The number of Winchester district cases since the start of the pandemic is now 4,699. Four deaths have been reported. Otterbourne Primary School, which closed because of staff shortages due to COVID, has since reopened.
From the heart, from care home to hospital workers. Hospital staff on the front line of the pandemic have received hampers and messages of support from residents at two Winchester care homes. Team members from Colton Care's Abbots Barton and St Catherine's View nursing homes brought toiletries and snacks to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. They included heart-shaped notes with kind and encouraging messages. The idea of making donations to intensive care staff came from Helen Smith, home manager at Wellington Grange in Chichester. She said many intensive care staff have been experiencing added pressure, anxiety and fatigue during the pandemic. We have seen the extent of PPE that hospital teams have to wear at the moment, and we know ourselves how difficult and uncomfortable it is to work in heavy PPE, especially in long shifts. We had to think about what we could do to make them feel a bit more supported. We thought some hampers and messages from our residents and team members showing their heartfelt appreciation was something that would go down well. Helen's idea was taken up across the entire group of 21 Colton care homes in the south, with each one gathering items for hospitals in communities they serve. Resident Penn Trinick said, "This comes from the heart. It's from all of us to them. This project is a good way to show them the thanks they deserve. Their care for us is much needed, and they need to take care of themselves as well." Two different types of hamper have been delivered with permission of each hospital. One is a pamper hamper, containing toiletries and such as moisturisers, hand cream, body lotion, luxury soap and shower gel. The other is a munchies hamper, with treats like energy-boosting snacks, granola bars and bags of nuts. Each type of hamper includes a written message from residents.
Spectacular finds revealed in Hyde Dig. A nationally important cache of medieval glass was found during the fourth Hyde 900 community dig in October, just prior to the current lockdown. The event, involving over 200 archaeologists, volunteers and diggers of all ages, took place amidst strict COVID-19 precautions in the gardens of householders in the area previously occupied by Hyde Abbey. Over 400 fragments of medieval painted window glass were discovered amongst the demolition rubble alongside the robbed-out foundations of a medieval wall. The dimensions of the foundations showed that there had been a major two-storied building on the site, located close to, but not in, the cloister area. The cache of glass is now being cleaned and recorded by the dig's archaeological consultant, David Ashby, at Winchester University. On being told of the find, Professor Martin Biddle said, "Year by year, Hyde 900 is adding to our knowledge of Hyde Abbey. First walls, and now these finds of window glass, which will give us a better idea of the splendour of the domestic buildings." Further analysis will be carried out to piece together the appearance of the window and its date. The glass showed that this had come from a high-status building located in the inner precinct of the abbey, possibly the abbot's lodging. The dig's architectural consultant, Dr. John Crook, stated, "The discovery of decorated glass is highly significant. Now we are gaining insights into the decoration of those buildings, adding to the architectural knowledge gained in the past few years."
Arthur hits a century of books in just one day. At just 6 years old, Arthur Grinstead has raised hundreds of pounds for his school. Like thousands of other children, Arthur has been restricted on when he can go out and play with his friends. So instead, the Oslebury Primary School pupil chose to read 100 books in just one day as a fundraiser. He's already surpassed his target of £500, and the donations continue to pile in. "My small school needs some money to help with improvements to the playground and for the creation of a sensory garden," said Arthur, before taking on the stack of books on January the 30th. "This year, the school hasn't been able to put on its usual fundraising events due to COVID, so I set myself the challenge of reading 100 books in just one day. Please help me raise some money for my school. All the children deserve it. And there's a picture of Arthur giving a double thumbs up beside a huge stack of 100 books.
Erin stages fundraiser for threatened venues. A student missing live music performances has decided to create her own online festival, all in aid of the Music Venues Trust. Ellen Griffiths Warner, 19, studies music and sound production at the University of Winchester. On February the 20th at 7 p.m, her After Midnight event premiered on YouTube. All profits will go to the Trust, which is keeping places such as the Railway Inn from permanently closing during the pandemic. The description of the event reads, "Though normally hidden away from the camera and preferring to be behind the scenes, producing music or working the sound desk, Ellen felt that the need to support the live music scene was so great she came out of her comfort zone to support grassroots venues and the emerging artists she loves. A massive supporter of the live music scene, having previously worked at both Latitude and Leeds festivals for Oxfam, she has been devastated by the effect the pandemic has had on that area, so decided to step up and do something about it by creating and hosting her own online festival with over 2 hours of live music in support of the Music Venues Trust, with all donations going to the Trust."
Proposal to close some roads outside schools is approved by county. Plans to close roads outside some Hampshire schools have been given the green light. Roads outside a number of schools across the county are set to be closed to traffic as part of a trial to be launched in the autumn. The move aims to improve air quality, reduce carbon emissions, and encourage more people to cycle and walk. The names of the schools that will be involved in this scheme are yet to be confirmed. The trial would consist of 3 schools, with a further 3 to 6 control schools to compare the impact of the measures. Hampshire County Council, which will be responsible for the project, said the measures for each school street will depend on the specific needs of each location. Road closures are expected to be in place at the start and end of the school day. The plans were approved by cabinet members at the County Council last week. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "We have a unique opportunity here to make the most of one of the positive changes that has come about during the past year, which is to encourage people to continue walking and cycling for their everyday journeys."
Nighttime work schedule amended by contractors. The company behind major electricity works in Winchester has rescheduled its plans to benefit local residents. As previously reported, Anthony Richardson and his partner were experiencing chronic sleepless nights in Southgate Street. He said he was close to losing his job due to the noisy work taking place directly below his bedroom window. Now, a spokesperson has said, Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, or SSEN, has been in discussion with this resident who lives near to the current works on Southgate Street. He has been extremely understanding of the need for this improvement project, which will provide a robust power supply to all nearby homes and businesses. And SSEN halted all night works while these discussions were ongoing. SSEN works hard to minimise disruption and noise on any works, so as to cause the least possible inconvenience to those who live and work nearby, and in this instance has altered the working pattern of the project to ensure that the works, which have the potential to be slightly noisier, have been rescheduled to take place prior to 8:30 p.m. In agreement with the local authority, SSEN is required to continue with the project to ensure that works have moved on from Southgate Street at the earliest opportunity, to benefit the many businesses on the street when they are able to reopen as coronavirus restrictions ease. SSEN would like to thank nearby residents and businesses for their patience while these improvement works are carried out. The Chronicle has contacted Mr. Richardson to speak to him about the improvement. The city is currently experiencing traffic disruption from roadworks, although the impact is muted by the relatively low traffic levels in lockdown. Workmen for Southern Gas Networks have been working for nearly 2 weeks on Durngate, near the junction with North Walls, and are due to finish this week. Emergency work has been done by Southern Gas Networks on Andover Road this week too.
Pair stuck in mud rescued. Firefighters were called to a flooded field on Saturday afternoon after two women ended up stuck in the mud. Crews from Cosham and Waterlooville came to the women's aid, who had become stuck in a field between Closewood Road and Fursley Golf Course in Denmead. Watch manager Craig Sadler from Cosham Fire Station said on Twitter, "We've just rescued two lovely ladies from the mud in Denmead. Please take care when walking across flooded fields. We would love to get their walking sticks back for them." One of the ladies is understood to have been up to her knees in mud. Following the incident, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service said, "This mud rescue is a reminder to take extra care when you're out enjoying your daily exercise and fresh air. With all the rain we've had recently, ground can easily become unstable and conditions can change quickly, so please take care." And this article is associated with a photograph of a very muddy field with a temporary pathway put out by the fire service and three hefty firemen lying on the end of it, obviously helping somebody to get out of the mud.
Dear. United in fancy dress to spread joy. From Minnie Mouse to the Incredibles and even a dinosaur, Alsford was inhabited by a group of unusual characters at the weekend. The town got behind the idea of a fancy dress day on Saturday to break the monotony of lockdown and raise money for charity. Willing participants were encouraged to walk around their houses, gardens, take exercise, and even go to the shops in their costumes. Writing on the event's Just Giving page, Paul Martindale said, "On a Zoom call with friends during the third UK lockdown, we were discussing what we might do to inject a little bit of fun to the day-to-day monotony. Something simple. And the idea developed from a small fancy dressing event to a town-wide event. So far, the Fancy Dress fundraiser has raised more than £700 for NHS Charities Together. And there's a picture of Alsford High Street with three people dressed up, a little girl looking like a princess. Someone else looks as though she's riding a unicorn. And I'm not sure what the third is. It might be a dinosaur. I'm not sure.
Death of senior figure in City Trust. Shona Carden was born in Calcutta in 1934 as the younger of two sisters, where her father worked as a mechanical engineer. On the outbreak of war, the family returned to their relatives in Northern Ireland before moving to Derby, where her father was appointed by the government to join a large engineering works. She finished her education locally and at Penrose College before being employed at the Foreign Office from 1952. In London, she met and married Michael Carden in 1957 during his final year as an architectural student and typed his undergraduate thesis in 1960 while nursing their first child, Matthew. Their second child, Melanie, was born in Reigate in 1962, where they'd moved when Michael was employed in a small local practice. They moved to Winchester in 1967, where he joined the office of Wilfred Carpenter Turner, the cathedral architect, and that later became Burford Marlowe and Carden, and eventually the present Radley House Partnership, based on St Cross Road, from which he retired as senior partner in 1999. Shona quickly came to love Winchester and became a member of the Preservation Trust, later renamed the City of Winchester Trust, of which she was appointed a trustee, reorganising and chairing the Trust's Planning Appraisal Group, so that it became the highly responsible organisation that monitors and comments on all the planning applications in the city, retiring from the role after 20 years.
Footage on social media of ill treatment of zoo animals. Shocking videos have emerged on social media showing men abusing and scaring zoo animals. The two videos circulating on social media show the men throwing a bottle of water at a giraffe's face and encouraging a tiger to approach the fence before kicking out at it and frightening it away. It comes after police were called to Marwell Zoo following reports that a group had broken in, causing damage, and were throwing things at the animals. Officers were called at 11:40 p.m. on Monday, February the 14th, after a member of the public saw footage of people breaking into the site on social media. Entry had been forced to the site and multiple buildings within the grounds, causing significant damage. Multiple police units were deployed to the incident, including police armed response officers, a dog unit, and a helicopter. The videos have been met with outcry online, with some social media users branding the group as disgusting, yobs, and vile. And there's a picture of a tiger. I can imagine, yes, it's coming up close to barbed wire. Perhaps it's just before it had been kicked. And anyway, four people have been arrested.
Mass testing at Discovery Centre. A mass testing programme is being rolled out across Hampshire this week, with the Winchester Library being turned into a site for rapid tests. It comes as the government has given the green light to a bid submitted by councils in Hampshire. The six-week scheme will aim to identify asymptomatic people. Those who have to leave home for work and who are not covered by existing workplace testing scheme will have access to rapid lateral flow tests. Among the residents expected to have access to the tests are childminders, transport and construction workers, and teachers. Tests can be booked online 24 hours in advance through any district website or on the Hampshire County Council website. Residents will be asked not to eat anything for 30 minutes prior to their tests, which will involve a self-administered swab of the nose and throat. Results will be confirmed by text message. Each resident will be able to book two tests per week between 3 and 5 days after their first test throughout the six-week programme. The County Council's Executive Member for Public Health, Councillor Judith Kraveski, said this is a huge and positive and important development in our response to the pandemic and our continued efforts to protect the health and residents. Around 1 in 3 people with COVID-19 display no symptoms and could be spreading the virus without knowing. Community testing will prevent transmission and break chains of infection by identifying more cases quickly and ensuring that people are supported to self-isolate. I would urge everyone who has to leave home for work to come forward for regular testing to protect themselves, their loved ones, and our communities. She added, I can reassure anyone who is visiting these sites to access the usual services that stringent infection controls are in place. The layout at each site has been carefully designed to ensure that people can move around them safely to prevent any possible spread of the virus. Furthermore, social distancing will be maintained throughout the testing process, and trained staff will be in attendance on site to guide people through the testing process.
A deadly disease, once thought to be rare, is becoming more apparent in Hampshire, with a recent case in Alresford. Dog owners are being urged to remain vigilant as 12 cases of Alabama rot have been reported this year. Anderson Moore's veterinary specialist in Winchester leads research into the illness, scientifically known as renal glomerular vasculopathy. Experts have now confirmed the new cases, taking the total since January to 12, more than 25% of the entire number recorded in 2020. Hampshire cases have occurred in Alresford and Basingstoke. David Walker, specialist in small animal internal medicine, leads the team at Anderson Moores. He says, "We're very sad to confirm 12 new cases of CRGV already in 2021. We are also awaiting results of further suspected cases. Unfortunately, we find ourselves at the time of year when cases are most commonly identified. It is understandably a worrying time of year for dog owners. However, the disease remains rare."
Flipping fun in virtual pancake race. There were no cheering crowds outside the cathedral this year, but plenty of flipping fun was had by all who took part in the Winchester pancake race. Unable to arrange actual races in the outer close, Winchester City Rotary, in partnership with Winchester Cathedral, moved the entire event online with short videos posted on Facebook. A number of entries were received, but the winners this year were Liam Kearns, who was dressed as Darth Vader for the best fancy dress. Helen Hurrell won the most unusual location for her entry shot at Farley Mount. And Luke from Winchester Church's Night Shelter won the contest for the most flips in 15 seconds, with 22 flips achieved. All the winners will receive a small prize in due course. Organisers have given a special mention to young flippers who flipped while on a windy coastal in a windy coastal garden, balancing segways on a trampoline and up a tree. Winchester Rotary has made a donation to a charity supported by their long-distance friend Afan Abdallah from Rotary Club of Kaisi Snow Peaks in Uganda, who joined in the fun. Donations in aid of Trinity Winchester and Winchester Church's Night Shelter were invited and amounted to £270.
Cathedral removes benches. Winchester Cathedral has removed public seating from the inner close because of concerns about people gathering during the pandemic. The church is worried about breaches of social distancing if people are allowed to gather at or around the benches. In a statement, the cathedral said, "After careful consideration, the seating in the inner close has been removed in order to support government regulations in tackling the COVID-19 pandemic. After an increase in social gatherings and antisocial behaviour in the inner close throughout the year, the decision was made to help reduce the number of people congregating and therefore to reduce the risk, as on many occasions the seats were being used by groups as meeting points. We still welcome people to walk through the inner close, in line with current COVID-19 regulations, to enjoy the beauty, religious significance and history of this private space. Seating in the outer close, closer to the city centre, has not been removed."
Leading the way in electric vehicles. Winchester is leading the way on the national rollout of electrical vehicle park charging points, figures reveal. But the think tank, the Policy Exchange, says there are still charging black spots in the regions across the UK, adding the speed of installations needs to increase to meet growing demand. There were 58 public charging points in Winchester at the start of January, according to figures from the Department for Transport. That's a rate of 46 per 100,000 people, a higher than the UK average of 31. Since October 2019, when figures began at local authority level, Winchester has seen 12 devices added to its supply. Meanwhile, across the UK, an additional 5,700 devices were made available over the same period, taking the total number up to 20,800 at the start of this year. In a bid to further boost numbers, Transport Minister Grant Shapps announced an extra £20 million was to be made available to local authorities. However, a report by the Policy Exchange says the speed of the rollout needs to increase from the current rate to meet the planned ban on new petrol and diesel cars in 2030. It also found a gap in coverage of the charging points across the UK, claiming the government's funding scheme for local authorities had not been evenly distributed. The DfT acknowledged the uneven distribution of devices across the UK. Mr. Shapp said the extra £20 million cash for local authorities will see the doubling of 4,000 on-street electric vehicle charging points already funded by the government. Electric cars have surged in popularity, with manufacturers currently supplying a record number. There were 999 electric vehicles licensed to addresses in Winchester at the end of September 2020, according to the latest DfT data, up by 48% from 677 in September 2019.
Hannah battles it out to progress in ITV's The Voice. She has done it. Hannah Williams, Winchester's spectacular singer on The Voice UK, has made it through to the semi-finals. Saturday's episode saw the 38-year-old progress from the battle rounds after beating Sammy Nathan. Both of the performers were on Sir Tom Jones' team, but the Welsh legend could only take one of them to the next stage. Before picking Hannah, he said, "The problem is I put two strong people together, which has made it more difficult for me. They both did a wonderful job." Her rendition of Cry Me a River, originally by Julie London, left the judges in awe. The semi-finals are expected to be on screens across the country in 3 weeks' time.
Nursery children visit residents. Residents at an Otterbourne care home were delighted to see their little friends and neighbours in the run-up to Valentine's Day. Children and staff at Bright Horizons Nursery created a heart for each of the residents at Brendon Care, Otterbourne Hill. The hearts were then put up on display on the outside windows and balconies of the home for the residents to enjoy and for the children to spot during their Valentine's walk. The children walked around and stopped off outside rooms and apartments to wave and call out residents' names. One resident later commented, "Seeing the children gave our spirits a much-needed lift." Lockdown has meant that the contact between residents and our grandchildren, or in many cases great-grandchildren, has been non-existent for almost a year now. Seeing happy young faces and hearing their chatter, if only for a few moments, gave us an optimistic signal that there is a life beyond lockdown. And there's a photograph of a group of children outside one of the rooms in the home and an elderly lady waving to them.
This is NHS How to Be Consulted. People across Hampshire and the surrounding areas are being asked how they would like to receive information and provide feedback on potential changes to hospital services. The results will inform public consultation plans for the Hampshire Together, Modernising Our Hospitals and Health Services programme, which is expected to consult on proposals for change later this year. It's really important we make information about our proposals as widely available and as accessible as we can, said Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. We know that people like to receive and respond to information in different ways, whether that is via leaflets and videos, or public meetings and drop-in exhibitions. Getting a sense of people's preferences will help us to tailor the range of information and activities we offer during our consultation. This is particularly important during the COVID-19 pandemic, as we find our normal ways of receiving information and engaging in our local communities are different. The Hampshire Together programme was set up in response to the new hospital programme as part of the government's health infrastructure plan, which named North and Mid-Hampshire as one of the areas to benefit from funding to build 40 new facilities before 2030. It includes the potential for the construction of a new hospital, with health and care partners working together to develop health, well-being and care services that provide everyone across North and Mid-Hampshire with access to high-quality, timely and sustainable hospital services as close to home as possible. More information about the programme can be found at www.hampshiretogether.nhs.uk. Dr. Matt Nisbet, Clinical Lead for Business and Partnerships at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Partnership of CCGs, said, "It's an exciting programme for everyone in North and Mid-Hampshire, and we really want to make sure as many local people as possible are aware of the consultation and have sufficient, easily accessible and available information in a range of formats to be able to tell us their views during our public consultation later this year. This work will help to ensure that." You can visit www.surveymonkey.co.uk/r/ for the Hampshire Together survey to take part in it, which will close at 5 p.m. on March the 24th.
New pools set to make a splash at Sport and Leisure Park. Winchester's new Sport and Leisure Park has reached another significant milestone, as the final touches of the construction of its two pools are now underway. The state-of-the-art leisure centre is on course to open in the spring, and now contractor Wilmot Dixon is close to finishing the 50-metre competition pool and the 20-metre teaching pool. The 50-metre competition pool will feature 8 lanes and has been designed to cater for regional swimming events, lane swimming lessons and varying training levels. Meanwhile, the 20-metre teaching pool will be a warm-up and cool-down pool suited for learners and leisure swimmers, and is equipped with a fully adjustable mobile floor. Along with the two pools, a family-friendly fun splash pad area will give toddlers a chance to gain confidence while paddling with parental supervision. Councillor Malcolm Prince, Cabinet Member for Sport, Leisure and Community, said, "We know that swimming is a great way to support our physical and mental health, and our new Sport and Leisure Park will provide everybody with a chance to enjoy the water. It's been a priority for the council to make the state-of-the-art facility as accessible as possible, and we've gone above and beyond to cater for everyone from weekend paddlers to the elite-level competitions."
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams.
And from us, Tom and Vara Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. Thank you.